Right, let's make it happen.
All right, we're rolling.
All right, welcome to podcast number six, or as they say in French,
six.
Six. There you go. We just Googled that.
Nice.
Only to find out it's the same.
That's right. Silly, okay, silly French.
Seven better be different.
You know, I'll be going to France in January.
I know.
Yeah, really?
With my foosball playing girlfriend.
That is pretty freaking
going to
awesome.
The world championships?
That's right. It's going to be pretty awesome, and I'll be able to say six.
You will. All you need to know how to say is number one.
Oh. Oh, yeah. She'll be glad to hear you say that. Yeah.
She may actually listen to the podcast now.
I'm Eric Moore. I'm here with Matt Chandler and Chris Albrecht. And we got a couple of topics today. Project design. We're going to talk about C# a little bit later on, and Visual Studio, MVC.
The new Visual Studio. Again.
10 beta or whatever it is, beta 10.
Well, you know, yes, Visual Studio 10 or 2010.
2010.
We talked about beta 1 in a previous podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about beta 2 now that it's out. So
we don't have Michael here with. Is Michael here today?
No, no. I'm not here, guys.
Good, good. So
he's not here. Yeah. No guests today.
No gotcha. Guests.
Nobody wanted to be on this one.
They all would be on the next
like,
one.
What are you talking about? Nah, we don't want to talk about that.
Right.
Nobody wants to talk about project design. Even the people
nobody
design
does. We want to talk about project design, though.
I don't
right?
even want to talk about it.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on.
I think that's how project design works.
I think that's how it works. Nobody wants to. Actually, it is kind of a fun part, I think. When you get a project to start from scratch, it is kind of fun to kind of make something that you're not reworking something, you know, you're creating something.
Yeah, I think you're, if it's a new project, yeah. It's pretty fun. And sometimes even if you're remodeling or refactoring or implementing new features,
yeah,
it can be interesting to see how you're going to change those as well.
Depends on who yeah. it is. What little bit I've done of project design and that and coming back in, I've never liked coming in on somebody else's
project
and trying to figure out what they were doing and, yeah.
And a lot of it is if you're really given time, you know, a lot of right. people say, hey, design this project, you know, make sure you have a good design and start code tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that's a little contradictory.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything in the works right now?
Yeah, we both actually just started is a brand new from scratch project. And it was kind of fun. We went through a lot of, we went through a lot of designs at first, actually.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it. It is kind of tough sometimes. And the way we started it, we were probably, or at least I was, trying to overcomplicate it for what it was supposed to be. And I think that's one of the hurdles you have to get over in project design is not to over-engineer it, which we've talked about
right.
in a previous podcast, but.
Yeah, I think a big benefit when you're doing project design is if you actually have a user involvement and a user who knows what they want. And we've got user involvement who, like a lot of users, you know, I think they think they know what they want.
A good amount of users, or do you have too many users? That's the problem I ran into. And the user involvement, of course, you need them, but then you get, we had like 10 users.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, at that point.
It was too many, and everybody had their own little.
If they can't agree on what they want, then there's no way you can design what they want. We tried up front to kind of single out what they want, or you know, from what they said to what we actually thought we could create, and what you know, you actually have to filter through and say, oh, this is what I think they want, because they don't know. You
yeah,
know, they,
yeah,
right.
They can't think in the type of development levels that we do. You know, they just equate it to some other application they've seen before,
right.
and they want it to work like yeah. that.
And in our case, we kind of had a working model to go at to model our program after, because it's a process that's done on paper right now. So we had a whole kind of flow that they want to keep following, but digitize it. So it was actually that made it a little easier for us, because we had a very close idea. We want to keep it close to what we're doing, but obviously get the benefits of doing it on a computer and being able to pull in like 75% of this information instead of having to write it down. Right. So,
well, and since we're talking about, you know, we're coders, so talking about an application that you're going to develop.
Yeah.
When we had our users in there, and we didn't do this, but get your thoughts on this. You know, we had the first user meeting, and then a lot of people will say, okay, now flowchart this out or get your processes, you know, all those different diagrams that you can get from ERDs to UMLs and all that.
Yeah.
Now, we just bypass those in lieu of other things, but I mean, have you guys had experience in the past of where that's really paid off? Do you think, in the one we did, if we would have sat back and done something like that, would that have benefited us?
Something similar using Sketchflow.
We did.
But not UML or anything. I mean,
we laid out more screens than actual processes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we went at it from almost a user interface of, we kind of got lucky in the sense of you said it was already a paper process.
Yeah, and right. I think that's probably why we
were converting it.
We didn't have to, if we didn't have that paper process and they were one, and this was like a brand new process, I think we could have benefited from
actually charting it out.
Because parts of it are complicated, but it was already written down for us.
Yeah, I mean,
so we kind of avoided that. But I can see that, and some people would benefit. But it I think it's an individual kind of how you work type of thing.
Right.
Like some people need flowcharts.
That structure, yeah.
Yeah, the structure.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that they do, but so I think it could be a good thing to chart stuff out like that, but it depends on the project, as with everything does.
Yeah. I was pretty lucky.
That's pretty much what it boils down to.
The exact same thing was what happened with me in the last big project that I actually worked on, that it actually involved coding. It was a paper process already.
And the process didn't change. It was right. More of almost digitizing
exactly.
That process.
Exactly. And it was just it was just a bill of material that had all kinds of input from designers and engineers and CAD drawers and all this kind of stuff. So it had a whole bunch of input, but they already had a paper process in play. So I didn't have to go through any of that stuff. I basically was like, what do you guys do? And they all told me. And I went, okay,
let me see how I can make that simple.
Exactly. And then we pretty much started with screens too.
Yeah. You go from there. I mean, the big part of my projects I start is I get an idea of what they are, and then I start with where I'm going to store in the database with the data and actually do the database layout. And for me, it's almost like diagramming it, because I go, okay, what information am I going to have to store? And, you know, when you're designing the tables, you kind of get an idea of the how it's going to relate.
Right.
Yeah.
And that helps lot for me.
To go back from what I was talking about, Sketchflow, which is in Microsoft Expression Blend,
mm-hmm.
which is, we discovered Sketchflow, and it's actually worked out really good for us, or really well for us. But
the proper dictation for us.
But it was cool because we were able to mock up screens without actually creating like HTML views.
Right.
And what they do is they give you these controls to model screens after that look like you drew them. They look like, what's nice about that is you have a loose design of how this is going to work. But then, you know, when you finish the product, they're like, well, why didn't it look like your original demo? Because obviously this looks like it was drawn
right,
out.
Right,
so
right.
It gives that illusion that you drew it, but it gives you the functionality of pulling in creating temporary data source, or what's the word I'm looking for? Data, like sample data sources.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing it would just generate data.
It generates
for you.
Sample data for you. You give it the like, if this
you're pulling said address, in, it would make a fake address.
Yeah,
that looked like names, a real address.
Price amounts. It has like default values, and it just throws in random numbers.
Well, that's cool.
So then you can demo this app, and it just runs inside the browser when you execute it.
And it actually has a look and feel of like button type.
Right. Yeah, you click, can click right. on click stuff. There, yeah. You can do events. So it kind of works like in a win form or yeah, in a Windows client type way where it, you have buttons, and it goes to different screens. It was actually really cool.
I think it worked out really well. Because the other thing that you do sometimes when people ask you to mock up screens for an idea you have, you know, users get in their mind, if you mock up a screen, say, if it's a Windows application, you know, you do a WinForm or a web form, you can put together a really nice looking screen that has no logic behind it. But the user's like, well, you're basically done, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Because that's all they see. They're used to just seeing that user interface. And
that's what's nice about Sketchflow is that...
Yeah, you don't confuse it with a real user interface.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we got really good feedback from it. We're actually very good feedback from it. But and there was a little bit of a learning curve. Just the thing. It generates everything behind the scenes using... WPF and XAML, which I'm sure you know what we're talking about.
I don't even know what it is.
It's Microsoft's, you know, Windows client presentation layer, Windows Presentation Foundation. It's kind of a replacement for WinForms, a classic WinForms, but it's crazy that
nobody's really ever going to understand.
We've never
it for
worked
a while.
With WPF, so it was definitely a learning curve working with it. With a Sketchflow, but we picked most of it up. There are a couple things we still didn't know how to do, and we just didn't want to spend the time learning it, so we kind of like hacked our way around it a little bit. So there's a little bit of a learning curve, but overall, and there's another product out there that's similar to Sketchflow, and I can't remember the name. I'll have to look it up real quick, that I've heard other people mention.
But the benefit was, like Matt said, you know, when we actually went out and said, okay, you know, we had an idea. Everybody knew how the process worked. And so, in our case, we weren't changing much of the process. We were just, you know, speeding it up a little bit, taking some paper away here. But it was nice to say, okay, here we see these type of things happening. The user gets to see it. Didn't take us a ton of time to design it or, you know, to lay it out. And then once we got good feedback to say, okay, now we see it. You know, if your thumbs up, that's right on. And it helped us be able to, once we went to develop the project, we're like, okay, we already know how we're going to lay out these certain aspects of it. Now, we, a lot of people out there, you know, we don't do it at our job, but when they start to do design, you know, they have to go meet with a DBA and make sure the tables are right.
Right.
We just kind of design tables and then send them to the DBA and say, fix it. You know? And so that's a, you know, there's an aspect that I don't think we've been involved, you know, from what we go through, that a lot of other people in some bigger corporations or some more red tape, I dare say, corporations that, you know, have all those steps. I think one of the other companies I worked for was so filled with red tape. I mean, we would have to have 30 meetings before you could even start writing the first line of code. And there's a you start getting everybody on the same page.
Right.
You know, people rework the idea so much that you almost never get started.
Yeah.
And then nobody's ever really happy at the end. You know, it's all at some point you have to start putting down some code.
Right.
And then just revising
and
that.
And start telling people,
yep,
okay, that will be a later implementation. That, you know, we'll get to that. That's one thing I had to do because everybody wanted to do, well, I want to be able to do this, and I want to have this form, and then I want to be able to print this out, and then I want to be able to just click a button and have it email it straight to somebody. And, blah, 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 and it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Let me just get the data in. Yeah. Let me just get the data in and then give you a chance to print it out in, you know, two or three options of how you want it to look when you print it out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we just had to start cutting people off, and we had too many people. So,
yeah. And that's where, like most people would say, that working specs come into hand, where you have a working spec for a product, but you have one person that manages that spec. So then you can, it keeps, you know, it has to, there has to be, you know, stuff's going to change, but, and then with our case, we do Scrum. So when we start a sprint, everything's locked down. When we start it, nothing changes. And for 2 weeks, you know, until we complete. And if there's another item that needs to be changed or added, it goes onto the backlog. So the other product is called Balsamiq. And I've heard a lot of people reference that. That's the other. It's a it's like Sketchflow,
but it's not vinegar.
But not yeah.
But it's tastier. And you can put it on your salad.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the last company I worked for, we developed software for, we had a software product, but we would enhance it per customer. So we had this one product that we delivered to everybody, but then we always made specific adjustments for each customer, which is, you know, a nightmare.
I think I'm working with some people that are doing that right now.
But one of the funny things that happened there was mine was completely separate from the developers. So me being a developer, I would just get handed specs that said, make this happen. And it is a horrible way to design, because if you don't involve a developer to see if it's possible,
right?
You know, it just makes it, they don't know what the, you know, people see stuff and they're like, yes, that does happen, but it may not be able to happen with our code.
Right. You know? Yeah. I had the problem with doing it. The project I was doing was an access, cause it was a band-aid fix to what they were eventually going to do in SQL. And I just didn't, man. My VB was so limited, and my access, you know, VBA was so limited. Right. And I'd be going, yeah, we can do that. We can do that. And then I would go into to my boss, and he'd be like, we can do that in SQL.
Yeah. But that's,
you can't do it in access. And I'm like, oh, sorry.
No, but it's one of those things, you know, when you get developers or when you're designing something, you got to make sure you have every aspect. You know, you have some type of project manager. Make sure that you actually have the developer in there to at least be able to raise a red flag when you're like, we're going to do all these great things. You're like, maybe next year, or, you know, that great thing.
Yeah.
But it was nice. You know, you got some specs sometimes if the, you know, analyst didn't go too far. You had rock solid specs that you just had to code to. Right. And you know, there's a lot of developers out there who don't like the design aspect of it. They just want to code, you know, they want this button to do that.
Yeah.
And I've worked with some of those people. I mean, we've got an interesting group where we all like to design and we all like to criticize each other's design. So, I mean, by that, though, I think we get really good designs. You know, we get people coming from every side.
Oh, yeah, because we're mean to each other.
We are definitely.
Yeah, this is my last podcast. I forgot to tell you guys. Screw both of you.
We forgot to tell you, buddy.
Oh.
Guess we're on the same page.
Guess you can record at that other studio next week.
No, but I mean, we're lucky that we actually have a lot of vocal people that,
yeah,
and nobody takes it personal.
Right, I was going to say, and everybody's fairly thick-skinned enough to know that it, even though it may be done in a, hey, your program sucks kind of way, it's really done to, you know, improve the product.
Yeah,
I like that font. Nice color.
As a segue, we're going to...
force cut.
We're gonna skip, since we're already talking about the project we're working on, which is the ASP.NET MVC,
MVC
application. We'll talk about MVC real quick. We talked about it in our initial podcast.
I was on the fence. I didn't quite know.
Yeah, I'd never really worked with it. I was very new to it. I had done like half of an app in it. But now we've both been...
I've done a couple pages, so I can say I hate it.
Doing more advanced MVC stuff. And I think, every day I work with ASP.NET MVC is, like, I like it more and more.
Yeah, it really is. It's I always have to try and, in my head, you know, balance it between, do I just like it because it's new? You know, I mean, I'm one of those people, you know, you've got the people that either like change or you really like change.
Well, MVC itself isn't new.
No, but new to me.
New to a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, it was new to me too. It's definitely not a new concept. It's been around.
I mean, it sucks. I like
long, but
type three letters Google. Type three more letters Google. You know, I mean, that's been my development life cycle right now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm like, well, that's a pretty neat way. You know, everything I see so far, I've really enjoyed.
Yeah,
you know, I'm.
I just can't imagine going back, because I know I'm gonna have to. You know, I have other apps that support that are web forms .NET web forms and. It's nasty going back to them after you've worked with MVC and how easy it is and how closely you're actually working with the protocol that you're using. It's so much easy to debug and to see what's actually going on from the client to the server all the way back to the client. There's not 40 layers of abstraction. And it's open source, so you can see the code, so you can see what Microsoft's doing, which is nice.
Yeah,
sometimes.
No, and it really is. Everything so far, after you get over the learning curve of, you know, setting up the route, setting up the views, controllers, it makes it simple. I mean, once you know what you're looking for, and I think that's the biggest thing for me, once you know where to look, then all of a sudden it everything's so much nicer. You know, you'll go, oh, I need to just go here, and this is only this code specific to that.
Yeah.
I'll even say that, you know, we were talking about MVC. The other thing that I'm implementing for the first time in a production environment, so the one that I actually care, is the Entity Framework, and I'm loving that even more. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, Eric, because I haven't written one stored procedure or one SQL statement.
So well, you kind of have. I mean,
I have,
because that's all it's doing is it's generating the SQL for you. But the nice thing about an ORM like that is that you get to stick in the C# world and let it generate the SQL for you. And our stuff in this case is fairly simple. So it's not super complicated SQL. So, but there are times when you can plug in your own SQL if it's something complicated that they're not optimizing for in their generated SQL code. But
yeah, and it's
for our stuff,
I
mean, it's generating the same, probably the same exact SQL code. We haven't looked at everything, but that we would write, you know, manually. But it's nice to be able to stay in the C# world and get that strongly typed code.
Yeah.
Which provides a lot of IntelliSense for us, and then compile time checking for us also, which is really nice.
And speaking of IntelliSense, or, you know, the compile time, I think that is one of the things, you know, when I first started applications, it was ASP. And, you know, so in
like MVC, classic ASP?
Classic ASP. And MVC, in a sense, goes back to that a little bit, because you start intermixing your HTML with your server-side code. But you do it in such a nicer way. You actually get some IntelliSense. You get some compile time checking.
Yeah, you're not necessarily putting business logic in your HTML. You're just like kind of, you're rendering your models to the HTML.
I still hate that little less than greater sign percent. I just,
yeah.
Makes it, that's
which
ugly.
Which is changeable, but
yeah,
it'd be, because we're working with, so many developers that aren't familiar with ASP.NMVC like we are now.
Right.
I mean, not that we've been using a long time either, but it's easier to transition to their default, what they call the Web Forms View Engine, than it is to like Arc or...
Well, and like you and I
don't even remember the other names, but...
When we were deciding, and it's easier to find stuff on Google.
Yeah, you know, because it is the default, and most people coming into MVC first... That's what they're going to use, but there are alternatives. And that is one of the nicest things I think about ASP.NET MVC is how extensible it is. Every single part of it is extensible.
Yeah, no, I mean, just the stuff that I was doing for the model binders, you know, when I came to that currency format issue.
Yeah.
Being able to just, all right, let me go put my custom one in here and I'm still good to go.
If they don't do what you like, it's like, it's almost too easy.
Almost. Yeah, there's probably a problem here.
It's
Microsoft. I changed my mind. I hate it again. That's what I said first. I think they're tricking me. But no, you develop it. I think you're right. You said on the first show that you could now develop do a one-page app just as quickly in MVC as I could in web forms. And I was like, I don't believe that.
Thanks.
But, well, I think I said it then. But I agree with you. It, you know, you'd have a couple more files than you would in a web forms app, but it wouldn't be any more difficult. It would just be a different place for your code. And in my opinion, as a developer on a half a project of MVC, you know, it's a little clearer to follow what you're doing.
It is. It's
fine.
It's a very clean separation.
Yeah.
Of concerns.
Speaking of clean separation, the other thing you talked me into.
Wow.
Where are we going with this?
This is our last podcast.
Barry did say it was Eric's out. I'm going to cleanly separate. Okay. This bottle cap. One of the things that you talked.
Aha.
I think you drug me into a little bit was the repository. I don't know if it's called the repository pattern. I don't know what pattern it's called that where you That was a good shot, though.
That was a good shot.
That was two caps.
We can do video podcasts. How awesome would that be? Or, I guess it wouldn't be a podcast. Hey. I don't know what it'd be called. But.
Yeah, they see our awesome studio, dude.
Yeah.
We've been putting my feet up now in the big studio.
Yeah.
No, but I really have enjoyed the repository pattern. Separating out, and I can't explain it very well, but it's where you have your data access separated out, very similar to, you know, an interior design.
Yeah.
But we don't couple it, you know, it's all interface driven, and we just couple it when the initial application starts up. Now, we're not using, at this point, we're not using any of those
dependency injection.
Injection, well, yeah.
And inversion, right? Yeah, we could go and use dependency injection, but I think that, yeah, it's almost at this point in the for this app, it's almost overkill. So
yeah,
it's working really well just using.
But it helped me out in a couple instances where my design wasn't as good as I thought and I had to change something up. I really, truly only changed the data access calls. And I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
All of the rest of my project, the same. Wanted to test what a different data access call would be. I mean, I've just created one new repository interface.
Yeah.
Or not interface, but whatever. You guys fill in the blanks because I can't think of
implementation.
It. Yes. and tested it out. And I was like, okay, good, bad. I mean, it was like going to the eye doctor. No. You know, just the changes.
Yeah.
That simple.
The repository pattern has worked very well for us. And not only that, but we work with this app has... It's not just a single data source app. There's
it's like 42 data sources.
Yeah, it's hitting like a DB2 database. It's hitting a SQL database. It's
Excel spreadsheet.
some SQL web services. Server,
yeah, it's ridiculous. So it makes it really nice.
So and all that stuff is evolve. All that and where we're getting all that information from is evolving too. Over time. So when some of this stuff changes from DB2 to SQL or we decide to wrap all this up in a WCF service, the implementation on our part will be very easy because the only thing we'll have to do is implement a new repository. Everything already works off of the same interfaces. The app itself, you know, the web, the interface, the GUI doesn't care where it gets the information. It's working off of interfaces. So it's worked very well for us. And I think
if we ever do unit testing, it may even work better. And
that's another thing. It's very good for us. Unit testing, which we haven't done.
Right.
And we just haven't found the,
that'll be a future podcast.
Yeah. We haven't found
we haven't
found the need for it, but I don't want to ruin a future podcast by bashing on it now.
Well,
We should do some of it before we start talking about it. That's probably the best.
I haven't needed it yet. We'll see if I need it in the future.
Yeah, unit integration testing and all that we'll do a podcast on that in the future when we know more about it. Maybe we can get someone on who knows about it.
Yeah, Eric, you know about unit testing?
No.
All right.
Negative.
The good thing we're severing ties.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
all right.
What else are we going
to talk about? We were going to talk about C#.
Yeah, C#. So C# 4.
C# 4.
It's coming out with embedded into Visual Studio 2010, which Beta 2 just came out.
Beta 2.
Which I like a lot more than Beta 1.
I'm not installing. You know what? You got to put out an actual release candidate before learning.
Yeah. But I would tell you that's a great idea for beta 1 because beta 1 I had some crazy issues with beta 1. Like weird stuff didn't work. It like crashed a couple times. My scroll on my laptop trackpad didn't work inside the code editor. All of that's fixed in beta 2. But yeah, release candidate I think is going to come out at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Like probably end of December. I mean, that's not... I don't know where I'm pulling that out of my ass.
That's kind of the end of the year.
I think
what they should do is release it at the...
I've heard it's like the actual release supposed to come out like in March.
All right.
So...
Fair enough.
That's halfway between now and then. But Beta 2, man, they fixed a lot of stuff. The Visual Studio itself has a... The interface is the same. You know, it's all WPF driven.
Yeah.
And it's all extensible using MEF. which is the new using meth. Not meth.
Wow.
It's meth. Dude, it's meth with a lisp.
I'm going to have to work tomorrow and say, I'm like Microsoft, I need me some meth.
Yeah. When I was at Tech Ed, that's what I thought they said first, too. I was like, what?
Man, how could they name something meth?
So it's meth, Managed Extensibility Framework. And it's built into .NET. Doesn't have anything to do with Visual Studio,
right.
But it's a way to make libraries and stuff very extensible, and so you can do plugins and stuff very easily. Hmm. Well, they designed that into Visual, they implement that into Visual Studio, so you can write plugins to Visual Studio using meth like super easy. So
nice.
There's some really cool stuff.
I will download all of those people's who create good ones.
Yeah.
I'll never write one myself.
But the new C#, there's been a lot of talk about about C#4, because the big implementation in C#4 is dynamic and
optional.
Which optional parameters, yeah. Which has the VB developers all.
It's got all of the C# developers fired up and hating it.
Yeah, I know it does.
I don't get it, and I don't know if it's because I was a VB developer. But like originally too, when you first told me, I was like, it sucks. And then they're like, well, what do you do now? And I'm like, I just overload all my methods like you're supposed to in object design. And they're like, well, yeah, but don't you have like one basic method you call it? I'm like, shut up. Maybe I do, maybe I don't.
Yeah. But I think that's what we wanted to talk about, was like where C# is going, because it's got a lot of people talking, it's got a lot of people arguing.
Okay. I think that's just nerds for you.
Yeah,
they have to be fired up about something.
Arguing about a programming language. of all things to argue.
I think they're all Linux people, too, that hate C#. They're like, I don't like it.
It hasn't even...
Yeah.
But, I think that's almost one of my favorite things about C#, is how much it evolves over other programming languages.
No, I agree.
Going from 1.1 to 2.0 was just huge because of generics.
Right.
And then 2.0 to 3.0 was huge because of Link.
Lambda.
And all that stuff, yeah. But now we're getting into territory which I'm not as familiar with, which is dynamic. Maybe it's because I don't work with a lot of... We work almost purely in C# right now, and for the past 2 years I've almost been working purely in C#,
right,
in a statically typed language. So to implement dynamic stuff, I don't have a use for it. What's
that quote you got from Tech Ed? I thought it was the best thing about
dynamic is actually a static
var keyword for everything now. I think that's a little improper, but it's too easy.
Well, but that's more to do with your... I mean, that's all still compiling to the same thing.
Oh, I know, but I still feel
bad. More of a visual, more of an IDE type.
If you were to look at my code, you're like, var this equals var that. That doesn't even make any sense. So I got to get away. But, and I'll do the same thing with dynamic because it'll get simpler. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
I like it,
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of... of course, now that beta 2's out, there's a lot more... I've seen a lot more blog posts about the new C# stuff, especially dynamic, more so than pre-beta 2. So starting to see a lot of stuff pop up
you got that boom,
I'm sure down. Well, by the time Release Candidate comes out, we'll probably be a lot more familiar with how dynamic will affect us and what it will give us over what we don't have now. So
I just won't have to cast anymore. I'm basically going to have X variables.
There's a
again.
New object called Expando Object. That's seriously the name of it.
How cool is that?
I just want to use it because it's called that.
That's just not... the other thing that I saw, especially in the article you sent to me about, talking is C#. We mentioned that article. It basically was talking about the life cycle of a language. And it starts out and it's, not fully featured, but, it's kind of new. And so then they add the features to work in today's applications and try to keep up with it. But at some point, do you keep adding new features, which kind of gets it, janked up and have too much stuff? or do you just let it stay static and say, okay, this is as far as it goes, but it doesn't keep up with technology?
Yeah.
Now, and so that was the discussion, you know, where is C-sharp? Yeah. You know, and a lot
we're
of people...
referring to the art.com.
Oh, Decode.com.
By K. Scott Allen.
K. Scott Allen.
Who also is part of the Herding Code podcast.
Herding Code.
Who are never going to now like us.
They aren't listening.
Maybe we should try to get him on the podcast.
No. Hey, maybe he does unit testing. We could ask him about that.
Yeah.
Because if I hate unit testing,
we need someone
and he likes
like,
it, I'll be like, yeah, I hate you. I mean, just because
we need
unit
someone
testing.
Popular. He's, I mean, he's pretty popular.
Yeah, home, yeah.
We need someone popular to take us
for
to
a
the
DBA,
next level.
For a DBA.
He's a,
what? Wow.
But yeah, he has an article about where C sharp is as a language.
Yeah, he does. No, I mean, he brings up a good point, because a lot of people were wondering. Their thing was dynamic and the optional verb. But, are we going too far? Are we trying to make, you know, has getting too much of stuff built into it? Now, I personally, I'm like you. You know, if you can keep doing things that are going to make it easier for me,
yeah,
then do it. You know, I've yet to meet, I don't know, would you say an upgrade or a new version of the .NET framework or C-sharp in general that I've been like, yeah, that blows.
Yeah.
And with the dynamic and optional, I just see opportunities, you know. I don't see, I mean, granted, I see places that I could shoot myself in the foot. But, I mean, I can do that with almost anything.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the thing is, you know, C sharp has its applications, and .NET especially, and probably it's, I mean, just because it is a framework that you have to run,
right?
It is more of an enterprise type programming environment. Sure, you could say that everyone who has Windows 7 or Windows Vista, you know, has .NET 3 or 3.5 installed on their PC automatically and virus. Wow. But, you know, there's certain, you know, if you're writing an app for everyone, there's, you know, you may want to think about doing it in C instead. But yeah, for C sharp, I think it's awesome that they keep implementing new features and expanding it, because it works great for us. It works great for enterprise level.
You know, I think part of it comes back to something Eric said earlier. And that is, like, when you come into a project that somebody else has coded, and we've done the same thing, there are a lot of features out there that can be implemented poorly. And if you don't work with, I'm not going to say highly skilled, but, you know, varying skill levels of developers are going to code differently. And I think that's where a lot of people get scared, is they see something like that and they think somebody's, rightfully so, you know, do it improper or code something that's going to be very difficult to support down the road. And so that's where they like, you know, some of these features to make them make stuff really strongly compiled typed. And so that it kind of keeps people in the line. You know, we just see the language moving forward to, if you've got the ability to see past, you know, some of those things, you're like, oh, okay, I can see where this will be a benefit and implement it properly. And that's going to be the whole thing with any language. I mean, golly, how many languages are out there? We can't even
like
possibly
nine,
be.
I think.
Yeah. There's at least like nine or
There's
10
like
languages.
Nine
now.
Languages.
But, you know, I mean, as a developer, we had to give up a long time ago on what we were going to be able to actually know. I mean, there's tons of stuff that I'm just not going to be, I'll never know.
And I still, I mean, but that's one of the things I like to do, though. I like to learn new languages. And that's what a lot of what I've been doing
lately.
You
like to learn old languages.
Like Scheme.
Yeah.
Well, that's part
of
it.
I like to learn new languages. I leave them in the dust.
But it gives you it kind of like gives you a broader outlook on programming itself and helps you see that, because C sharp doesn't fit every need.
Liar.
So for us, it really does.
Yeah, I know.
Inside a corporate environment, internal, it meets almost 100% of our needs. But when you go outside, which eventually we'll do with external type stuff, I mean,
right,
we'll do that eventually.
But I mean, C-sharp is positioning itself to I mean, like with our WCF stuff, to be able to interact with other languages.
Yes, very much, yeah.
So, well, I think we'll be fine.
I like to keep up with all languages, though. Keep well-versed on a variety of languages that do different things. Because you never know when we'll need to write some scheme.
I hope I never know when we need to write it.
All those Python apps you guys
have. Right? I mean, we wouldn't have an application for it right now that I could think of. But
I would just write it in C#, baby.
Yeah.
All right.
What are we gonna, let's see. Lastly.
Games.
Off-topic waka, waka, discussion.
Waka. Or how do you do it? Quick. How do you do scratching?
You don't go waka waka.
All right, Eric, you're a
waka
musician.
Waka waka.
You do now. That is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Hey, look, if we're separating, might as well get it out now.
No, Matt was showing me talking today, and so I just watched some videos on the DJ Hero. Now, you said you just listened to it, right, Eric?
I could hear you guys from my cube, you guys listening to it. And I was like, oh, they must be watching DJ Hero.
Now, have
but
you ever
I,
played,
haven't, I haven't seen any of it.
Have you ever played the
just came
Guitar
out yesterday.
Hero Rock Band?
Oh, yeah.
Any of those
oh,
games?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, as I saw it on the demos, the DJ Hero is, you know, I don't know who makes it. Is it the Guitar Hero guys?
Same people.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, Harmonix or Harmonix is Rock Band, I guess.
I don't know.
I think they are.
Let's look it up. We have the internet.
Sure, go ahead.
I'll tell you right now.
Interweb.
This is a side note. I have games. I bought Rock Band Beatles, and you know, people may curse me. Not every Beatles song was good. There's some bad Beatles songs.
No.
That's not true.
We just lost all of our listeners. Yeah. All of our remaining listeners.
Well, you're not back to the next podcast. Let's just put that
Damn it, that's
now.
Not how it's supposed to work.
No, because I agree with you, Chris, so I guess I'm gone too.
God. It's going to be me and Michael next week and Bradley.
I like all the Beatles songs. No, it was fun. I mean, it was fun because, you know, the Beatles songs, you know so well.
Right.
I didn't even realize how well I knew them. But man, there's some weird ass Beatles songs. I never.
Well, there were some drugs involved in the Beatles.
I guess. There's some strange stuff. Even the songs that I thought I knew, I'd read the lyrics. I was like, oh, Beatles don't say that, do they? I thought they were like, love, peace.
DJ Hero seemed to compare thus far from what you've seen.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, it's a lot different.
Because it doesn't seem like it could be as interactive as like Rock Band.
I don't think it's as like a complete band. What we
yeah,
see, it could be up to two
not,
players.
Yeah, you can. But the way it works is you compete against people. You're not necessarily playing in a band together.
Gotcha.
Because obviously a DJ is a single entity. Usually,
right.
You know, you're only me. Only one of us would use the word entity. It's a single entity. They create a repository
in the musician's framework.
Yeah, but you know, it's a single person. So you do like little battles. You can do battles against each other. Well, it's really neat. It's actually more. More.
Do you have a picture of it up?
It's more. Yeah, let's show everyone on the podcast.
No, just Eric. Screw you, people listening. You can go Google it yourself.
Ah, cool. So, that actually looks like a turntable.
It does, doesn't it?
And it actually has more function. You have the three buttons, but you actually move it back and forth like you would scratch.
Right.
To do, and then you have the
waka waka. You're getting it all wrong.
And then you have the cross.
I'll show you later.
Yeah. You have the crossfader that you use also. So it's a combination of using the crossfader,
right.
The three buttons, and the scratching.
And the scratch.
You know, like
gotcha.
A DJ would.
Right.
It really is more in-depth than I thought it was going to be.
So no.
I'm thinking about actually getting it.
It looks fun. I mean, it almost looks like something that you would actually pull out in a party and just be like, hell, I'm going to be a DJ on the songs I've got, and, you know, because like we were listening to some of the, what
it's
do
all,
they call it? The mashups?
Yeah,
or whatever?
They're all almost all, or actually almost all, I think all of them are mashups of like a, maybe like a hip hop or a pop or electronic type song,
right.
And like a popular, either an old one or a new song mashed together.
But the same concept, you've got to be able to watch.
Exactly. Right.
When to go waka, when to go wiki, and when to,
exactly.
To
fade.
Exactly.
And when to fade.
It is made by Activision,
scratchy,
so the same people.
But, I mean, I'd be awesome at it, so.
So is there going to be.
Chris up
yeah,
there.
No,
or Chris,
yeah.
I can't even talk anymore.
No, but it does look. It looks fun. I mean, all of those games.
But I mean, are you going to be able to compete? I guess I'm assuming head to head with, but you're only going to be able to compete with one other person and then go online. I guess and compete online. Right.
I don't even know.
I mean,
we should have researched this before talking about it.
I have the Rock Band, and I have the Rock Band,
the only Rock Band.
Right.
You guys all have to come to my house to play. But it does. It lets you, you know, you can all play everybody.
Right, right.
But you can go online and play against someone else. And that, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know if it's the guy competitive nature, but even the girls, I mean, they get fired up about it to just go try to beat down some other person.
Okay. Eyes on their website here. So it has a...
Did you just say eyes on their website?
I was on.
Eyes on their website.
Eyes on their website, yo.
And it was good. I mean,
and I was scratching it.
Wow.
This podcast is over.
Are we going to make it?
Quickly digressing.
It has an online and offline multiplayer competitive and cooperative modes.
Hmm.
So you can
I could scratch with you.
You can do DJ versus DJ, DJ plus DJ, or DJ plus guitar.
Whoa.
So
you could be like Anthrax.
It supports the DJ turntable.
Anthrax has a DJ?
They remember when they teamed up with Public Enemy?
I do not.
Man,
oh, no, because
so you have that. You're my age. I could see Matt not remember.
I remember that.
I was like two when that happened.
I was going to say like Aerosmith and Run DMC.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So it does support the DJ turntable that comes with it. And
I don't know if you would just like, if you use the guitar almost like scratching.
No, I think I saw a demo of this actually, but they had it on auto mode, the guitar, and it's just like a Rock Band or a Guitar Hero guitar, since this maker's a Guitar Hero.
I mean, I feel like Eric when I play Rock Band, so I wonder if I'll feel like Will I Am when I do DJ Hero.
You might.
Well, you have plenty of guitars, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you got Rock Band and Guitar Hero.
I mean,
so.
I don't have this many guitars. But
you have as many as Eric here. He's got like 20 guitars in his studio. Dude.
But my guitars, I can make them sound like any song I've purchased.
So can I.
Oh, you and me, Guitar Hero, baby. You could use your real guitar. We'll see.
We all need to get DJ Hero.
All right, we need to get some DJ Hero.
I think it would be cool though, because you don't. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, and because I'm not big on hip hop and electronica and all that kind of stuff. I guess you do have guys who just do nothing, but in a club, that's all they do is DJ.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not related. It just makes me think, well, when I think of the, quote, DJ as a musician, the turntable as a, quote, instrument, I think of it being with, and I hate to say that this is the only example that comes to mind, is like Limp Bizkit or something. Mm-hmm. Or even Korn, you know, where you've got a band who has a DJ.
Yeah. Korn doesn't have a DJ.
They did, didn't they? Every now and then?
I think actually every like rock new metal band in the late 90s did.
Right, it was a prerequisite, didn't you?
Was like the new the rap metal. They call it rap metal?
Yeah,
like old school Limp Bizkit
Anthrax got together with Public Enemy.
Well, that was even before Limp Bizkit. I mean,
before apparently it's old.
But seriously, but I mean,
you
know.
You're the Baby Fury.
Baby Fury. Love Baby Fury.
But that seems to me like it would be more, and you would have a guy, you know, either rapping or something like that.
I thought it was
That's
interesting.
That's what I like to do.
Yeah.
I rap in my spare time.
Exactly.
But talking about a DJ is actually being...
How white did I just sound, though? And then you would have a gentleman rapping.
You know.
What's this rapping you speak of?
It's kind of like poetry, but
rapping
a little
presents?
Bit harsher.
Christmas is coming up.
Wow.
But when the Black Eyed Peas came to town... And
which was awesome.
Which it was really actually awesome. I don't even know, but
I didn't see it.
Well,
wasn't there, and I can only name one Black Eyed Peas song.
You would have enjoyed. I was amazed.
It was really enjoyable, actually. Yeah.
You know, I was there just.
Of course,
to see
they were
U2,
opening up for U2. Yeah,
but it was amazing. I mean, they were really good. I knew maybe half the songs.
First time I heard of Fergie, I thought they were talking about the Queen or Duchess or whoever that other.
That girl
Fergie
can
is.
Really sing. Like I'm actually, really
sure
sing.
She can.
I was surprised.
And she's pretty hot.
It was cool outside, and it was outside.
Yeah,
and you know it's.
I have no idea if that makes it harder or not, but it sounded awesome.
I would think it would.
It can affect your
voice. I'm not a singer, but she was still some pretty good tunes. So
her booty was humping.
She had some humps and some lady lumps.
Lady lump humps.
What I was going to say, though,
did her milkshake bring the boys to the yard, or was that somebody else?
That's somebody else. Okay.
Her milkshake.
She did have a feeling, though.
She had a feeling.
Did she get it started?
She got it started. Whoa, they all got it started.
Yeah. Wow. It was pretty much started. Yeah.
Okay.
And then it was done for like 45 minutes, and I was like, it ended already. Once you got started, stopped.
So DJ Hero looks cool.
No, what I was going to say was the head guy, was it Will.i.am?
Will.i.am.
Was doing a special DJ thing, which I can't process it through my mind that it cost money to go see him DJ. And I can't even think of that as being an actual skill that I would pay for. I'm like, you're not going to do
it. But it is. It is.
But I was like, I'm going to have to hear these DJ mashups are as cool as they can be. Because in my mind, I'm like, you didn't even make this music.
When did they start calling them mashups? To me, mashup is like Fark.
Yeah, I doubt. Maybe Fark created it.
Maybe.
Oh, maybe we're calling it something wrong. Yeah. They don't call them mashups. Okay. We made that up.
Okay.
We made that up in the podcast.
But they will now. I'm going to go DJ Hero me some mashups. See you guys later.
I think this podcast is done.
Yeah, I think it is too.
It's overcooked.
Waka waka.
So join us next week as we talk about something else.
Yes.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. We didn't know what we were talking about.
I think
about
Bradley wants to be on it, though. So you guys who enjoyed Bradley, maybe he'll be back.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Maybe you'll hear him back for the first couple minutes of the podcast this time.
We'll try to get it right this time. Well, thanks, guys. It's podcast 6. Once again, in French, that is 6. And thanks, Matt. And thanks, Chris. You know what we should say?
Let's do it. Say it right now. Say it.
If you have questions or comments,
don't turn off yet. Listen.
Stick around for 30 more seconds. Trust me, you're going to want to hear this.
Send your questions
straight from the headlines
or comments or gripes, complaints, whatever.
Yeah.
To podcast@craftycoders.com.
podcast@craftycoders.com.
I can't believe we didn't say that.
.com.
So there you go. And tune in next time.
Yeah. Have we ever tested that site like an email?
I tested it. I had Michael test it the other day. Send me one just to make sure it's working.
So it works.
Seriously, no one sent us an email.
Then you guys suck. Send us an email.
All right, that's it.
Later.